Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So today I'm going to be reviewing a book which is a fantasy book. I seem to be doing a few different fantasy books in a row, but let's just get to it. The reason I'm reading this book is that I was thinking, I'm going on a long trip, 6-week work trip, and I had some Audible credits and I was thinking, okay, what shall I spend them? And I was looking through Audible and I was thinking, I can't really work out exactly what I want here. Nothing really caught my eye. So what I decided to do is go over to Goodreads.com, which is a good service, a good social network or whatever it is. And I thought, well, what I'll do is I will look at my to read list and look at all the books that have been recommended by Science Fiction Book Review podcast. Science Fiction Book Review podcast listeners, because there's different shelves or different categories that you can use there, and then sort by overall rating, highest rating, and I just picked the top two books of all of the books that I've not read, which have been recommended by the listeners and that are highly rated, just in general. I think also by, you know, generally highly rated by Science Fiction Book Review podcast listeners. So one was The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell, and the other one was The Warded Man by Peter V. Brett. The Warded Man, otherwise known as The Painted Man, otherwise known as Demon Cycle, The Demon Cycle, book number one by Peter V. Brett. Now, I know this book came out pretty early on when I was actually doing the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. This came back out in 2008, and at the time I was thinking, oh, maybe I should read that. But also at the time, I remember I didn't actually review fantasy books on this podcast. I just stuck mostly with science fiction, but then over the years I've gone, okay, I'll just include the fantasy books as well. So I thought I'd get to this. It's 18 hours, 14 minutes as an audiobook. And narrated by Pete Bradbury, who does a pretty good job. More on that later. So the setup of The Warded Man, otherwise known as the Painted Man. I remember reading something about it, like, you know, years and years ago when this book first came out, and subsequently more books in this series have come out. I think there's 5 books in total, although only 3 or 4 of them have come out so far. I can't remember. Because I didn't really check, actually. It's the first book in a series, but I thought it might be a more of a standalone novel than it actually was, but it seems to be very much setting up characters to go on and have a more interesting story later on. So the setup is this. So you've got the... there was sort of like a quite technologically advanced world, I guess, like for a normal fantasy book anyway. But then 300 years prior to the events of this book, the demons rose up from the core of the earth. These demons are called the Corlings because they're from the core of the earth. And there's different demons that come out at night. You've got flame demons and wind demons and rock demons and wood demons and sand demons and other things like that. So all of the different elements and different kind of substances have their own demon. And each of the demons have got their own size and shape and capability. Like the wind demons can fly and the flame demons can spit fire. And the wood demons can catch fire, which is unfortunate for them if they're hanging around flame demons. And the rock demons and the sand demons are kind of these big things which kind of crumble away, but otherwise are very big and dangerous. But they only come out at night, the idea being that as soon as the sun dips below the horizon and it gets dark, the demons are like, okay, we are vampire type things, and we're going to rise out of the ground and start killing humans. And I thought, I know this is a weird thing to say, but I thought as we were going to go through, I'd get sort of like learn more about like the motivations of the demons or where they came from. And we got history of the demons and where they come from, but not really the motivations. The motivations just seems to be kill all humans. That's it. That is the only plan. So when they come out, they will generally kill other things as well. Like farm animals, I guess, and other animals, but generally humans are the thing that they want to eat, kill, and eat the most. And at the end of the night, after they go on a killing rampage, a frenzied rampage of killing humans, they all, you know, just sort of like fade away and float back down, or like sink back down into the earth again. And during the daytime, all the humans can come out and go about living their life. And at night, they all shut themselves up in their houses. And the reason why their houses are safe is because they have wards around them, written symbols that they put around the houses and put on the doors of the houses and the roofs of the houses and the floor of the houses. So anywhere there's like worked stone or worked wood, the demons can't get through if there is a ward there. And there seems to be kind of a general range of how far the wards are effective. So if you put a ring of wards around you, they can't get in. As long as the ring is small enough, there's like a safe zone encompassed by these wards. And if you have them in a big house and you put them on the roof, the demons can't get in through the roof. But the demons are always looking for different cracks in the walls and things like that. So that's pretty much the setup. 300 years ago, the demons come back. We have some wards. We have a way of stopping them coming in and killing us. But unfortunately, of course, humans do get killed quite a lot. And the book begins in these different storylines, three main storylines, but they pretty much all begin in a small hamlet or a small village. And they kind of break through and start killing people. And then they're sort of like, okay, we've got to heal the people, we've got to save them, we've got to rebuild the houses, put the wards back on, and that's the kind of thing. Now, the world, though, I was actually thinking, going, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. This is interesting because, you know, like, what would be the different ways that different places work out? Like, you know, I always really enjoy going around the world and I see lots of different ships. And I was thinking, well, a ship is a ship. What's the difference between a ship each around the world? But everywhere that I go in the world, it seems like the ships are different, like the small sailing boats. And like, so you're on a river and it's this kind of boat, but then on a different river, you're like, well, this is just a river, isn't it? Why are there totally different kinds of boats? But, you know, different technologies, different cultures, different, you know, parts of the world. And I was thinking, well, that's what we're going to get now around, you know, between the different places. Unfortunately, the world that most of this book takes place in is very kind of the same. Like, there's three different villages, but I could never remember the names of each one of them because they were all almost indistinguishable. One of them has a bridge next to it, I guess, and another one has a something else, but there's not really very much to tell them apart. And then they go to these different cities, and again, I could never really remember, like, what was this city? Oh, this was the city that had some rocks, and this is one that was mostly made out of wood, I guess, mainly wood, I don't know. But generally, it seems to be kind of very kind of white European medieval kind of style going on with you know, messengers and jonglers and women who are healers and men who run taverns and things like that. That's kind of what we get generally, except for there's this one diversion into it, like a very I don't want to just say it's a very racist depiction of Arabs and Muslims, but and the kind of Middle East culture, if not racist, very one-dimensional and very I don't know, unflattering, but maybe racist is the best way to talk about that. Anyway, so we get onto these. Oh, so the characters that we have here in this book. So three main viewpoint characters. We start off with them all very young, at different ages. One of them is 4 years old or something when we first meet him. His name is Rogen, and he grows up throughout the book. And then another guy, another young boy, is like 10 years old, called Arlen. And he grows up in the book as well. And Leisha, who is like 12 or 13 at the start of the book, and she also grows up. So what we actually have, I didn't realize how much of this book was going to be, you know, like a coming of age story, but it's not really about that. But like at the end of the book, they're all adults, but at the start of the book, they're all children. And so it feels like a slow paced collection of short stories that each, you know, so each of the children get, you know, a story when they were children and living in a village, and then they go off to, you know, elsewhere. Two of them go and live in a city quite early on, so we get more stories of them and how they survive in the city, and they become apprentices and kind of learn a trade in the world. And then as they turn into adults, I'm thinking, well, of course they're all going to meet by the end of the book, and of course they do all meet by the end of the book. But it's kind of like, in some ways, it's like slow paced at the start, and it does feel like, you know, that Peter V. Brett, who was writing this, he was like, right, I want to tell them, we're going to set these characters up and these are going to be here in this story. But when I went into it, I was thinking, okay, what's the story of this book going to be? And the story of this book is like, remember those children and what they were like when they were kids? now they're adults, none of that really matters that much for the main character, like Arlen. He was like, oh, and I'm an adult. I'm going to put aside everything that happened to me as a child, and except for this one event is going to affect me and everything else isn't going to affect me. But then I was thinking, well, why did we spend so much time with you? If all of that stuff that happened as a child, you kind of just turn your back on, and you just become a completely different person by the end of the book. And it seems to be like at some points time feels like it's passing really, really slowly at the start, as setting up the characters. And then it goes, oh, and now these next chapters are from this year to this year. And I was like, okay, that's like a 3-year span. And we get like a chapter with each character of what they're doing within those 3 years. And this next section is these set of 3 years. And so we get another set of chapters of what's happening to those people in those 3 years. But I guess that overall it's set over about 12, 13, 14 years, the book is set. But you wouldn't know it when you're reading the start. You're like, okay, this is a book about three children going on. So we have our main characters. I'll do them in reverse order of importance. We've got Rojin, who is a young kid who later becomes a jongleur, which is like a minstrel who travels around with messengers around these different villages, which are all isolated, because it's very dangerous to travel between villages and hamlets and cities. So mainly the people who do that are the tradesmen and messengers. And the messengers go around with a jongleur, and they kind of go around and entertain people. And the jongleur attracts everyone there, and he can keep an eye on people and report back to the duke and the other things that are going on. So the jongleur, Rojin, is a jongleur, and he's also disabled. He gets right at the beginning of the book, his hand gets damaged, and he grows up and he's like he can play a fiddle quite well because it's his right hand that gets damaged, and his left hand can still play the strings and the neck of the fiddle, so he gets pretty good at that, and he learns how to juggle and stuff. And at the end of the book, I was like, why was this guy in the book again? I guess he has this one superpower where demons are afraid of his music or something. But then I was thinking, okay, if demons aren't only afraid of wards, but they're also afraid of music, is this the first time anyone's ever played music around the demons, and that's what it is? And I was thinking, okay, no, maybe his bow and his fiddle has got, maybe they've got wards on it. These like magical system, like magical writing system, is on the bow or on the fiddle, and that's the kind of thing that's sending. But no, it's not that. Or maybe he's just magic in himself because he was bitten by a demon, and then his magic and then his music sends away the demons. Or is it just because he's so fantastic? And it was never really answered, and it was kind of set up. And there was like, oh, did you know music music can defeat demons? Isn't that amazing? And we're like, right, yeah. And it's like, but surely someone, but in 300 years, surely someone must have thought of that before, or maybe observed demons as music was playing. Maybe it's happened before. Like, of all the other times that all the other jongleurs and all the other minstrels were out, did none of them practice music while they were being attacked by... Because overnight, like, the demons are attacking, you've got this ring of wards around you, this kind of, like, a portable ring that they set up and to stop the demons coming in. And so all jugglers have spent time out just hanging out at night. Did none of them practice their music? Is it only Rojin? Anyway, he's a bit of he's an okay character, but his story got a little bit tedious at one point because a lot of what propels his plot is like stupidity or naivety, not just of him but other people, you know. And he'll insult someone or get into a fight, and I'm just like, just don't get into the fight and your life will be fine. You know, this person that you're hanging out with, this alcoholic drunk, this guy, he's obviously bad news, and other people are going, hey, do you want to come and work for me? And he just doesn't all the time. And I was just like, just, you know, your life could be like way easier. This whole story, a lot of the story didn't have to happen at all if he had just not been quite so naive and not quite so stupid. And again, his character gets a little bit tedious. Thankfully, he's not in the book much. The next character is Leisha, and she is a herb gatherer, or she learns to be a herb gatherer, and that is someone who is like someone who is a healer and knows a bit more about chemistry and can read and is generally good. Stuff happens with her at the start of the book. I thought her story was going to be like the main story. There's kind of lots of kind of coming of age stuff there when she's like, oh, when I want to have babies. Oh, this is a big part of the book as well, that like, because humans are being killed all the time by demons, one of the big duties of everyone is to have as many babies as possible. But then at the same time, there is this weird thing. It's like, yes, everyone should be having babies and we should have as many, but then there's this very it's kind of a very regressive, very conservative view of marriage and not having sex before marriage. And if you do, that's terrible. And she gets into a bad situation with her fiance. And it seems to be so many mixed messages in this book with sex. Like, it felt like I was like, oh, okay, is this a young adult novel? Is this for kids? But because all of the characters as we meet them are very young, like 10 years old, 12 years old. But then straight away it's like, oh, 12 years old, and as soon as I have my period, I'm gonna get married and I can have sex and we're gonna get married. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's a little bit young, isn't it, to talk about this kind of stuff. And then For such a chaste kind of like, ooh, and we have to, I'm going to have honor and I'm going to be a virgin really, really long time. Two of the main characters here, like, get to the very end of the book and it's like, oh, and they're both virgins. I'm like, bullshit, are these two people both virgins? But okay, whatever. But it starts off like weirdly chaste and conservative. But then, like within the first few chapters, it goes really strong right into the rape and incest kind of area. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a bit grim, but also very childlike. So I'm like, are we meant to think that characters in this world where everyone is encouraged to have children straight away and women, that's their main job, is to have that, but also rape and incest is fine, I guess, that people just let that go? But then anyway, it's I couldn't really get a handle on what the view of women were going to, all this kind of like, what level is this going for? Is it the kind of naive and sweet kind of fantasy where everything is nice and it's possible to get to 23-year-olds and still be a virgin and still that be okay? And are just people going to get raped? You know, like, what world are we living in here? There never seemed to be any kind of like, I wouldn't say rules about it, but like any sensitivity for the characters that at some points there doesn't seem to be any choice in what they get into the other. And at other points, it's like the choice is the most important thing. And also, like, what women are for in this. At some point, it's like, oh, in this city, women are very important and they are the main advisors to the Duke. And then that idea is like, okay, so women are very important. So are there going to be any women in the plot? No, they're only the love interest for the main characters. And like, oh, okay, right. And what about this woman? Is she going to be important? She's going to be a mother. It's very important that you're going to be a mother and the mothers have a lot of power. But no, that person's just ignored. And let's go and have adventures with the boys over here. So at some points I was thinking, okay, is the total inequality and the way this is written, is this sort of setting up, oh, okay, in this book it's bad, but when we start defeating the demons, women are going to become more powerful, or they're going to become more liberated, and they're not just going to be baby making machines, and they can do other things. And I'm like, okay, I'll let this go. Maybe in the following books this is where it's going to be. But it seems to be like trying to have it both ways within this novel. It's like, oh yes, women are great, actually just baby making machines, and women are equal in there, but let's ignore them all over here and have the boys' adventure. And actually, women are really strong, let's just have them raped and incest, that's fine as well. And then they're actually just helpful. So it's this, again, pretty weird. Unlike some other fantasy books where there is massive sexism, but at least the women within the book have a function. Just off the top of my head, like the Prince of Nothing series, you're like, okay, women are obviously downtrodden in many ways, but some of the main characters are women and they are the most interesting characters, like the Empress or the mother of the Emperor, and some of these other characters obviously very important to the story. And with Leisha, our herb gatherer, yeah, sure, she helps out, like she has some adventures, but they're most of her adventures are about, okay, I don't want to be a baby making machine, I'm going to fulfill the other role of women in society, which is a herb gatherer. That's the other job that a woman can do in my society. And later on, she is only seems to be there to help heal the guys who are having adventures and to have sex with them, or not have sex with them, or to be a sex object for them. And I found that quite disappointing. Okay, bringing us on to our main character, Arlan, who starts off, he wants to be a messenger. And then he wants to train to become that, but to be a messenger, you have to be apprentice as a warder, someone who writes the wards. And he's very good at it. He has a natural talent for it. Now, this book in Britain, when it was published first, it was called The Painted Man, but I read it called The Warded Man, because that's just what it was called on Audible. And I think because it was published in the United States as The Warded Man, I'm not sure, The Painted Man, maybe that seems a bit like maybe that's racist. I don't know. I don't know why it was called The Painted Man. I think seem to remember years ago reading about this book that they were like, Painted Man is a bit too much, you know, is it a bit of a black and white minstrel kind of thing to paint yourself black or whatever. Anyway, The Warded Man is what it's called. Now, the book is called The Warded Man, and we meet Arlen. So straight away, I was like, okay, Arlen is going to grow up to be the Warded Man. And so that means he's going to paint the wards onto himself or tattoo them onto himself. And so he can pass through demon infested countries at night. And I was like, right, so when's this going to happen? And at the start of the book, well, I was like, he's young yet now. He's probably going to, once he learns warding, he's going to like work out how he's going to be the one to experiment. He's going to be the first one to work out what wards work best as tattoos or on a human being like that. So that's what's, and it doesn't happen. And then I was just thinking, but it's called The Warded Man. And he gets about a quarter of the way through the book. No, it hasn't happened. Half the way through the book. I was like, when is he going to tattoo himself? 2/3 of the way through the book. No, still not two. Still hasn't tattooed himself. And then it gets sort of like 3/4 of the way through the book. And suddenly he's like out of the blue, he's like, right, now I know these wards and let me just experiment with tattooing. And I was like, wow, okay, so nothing happened except he worked out that he could tattoo himself in 300 years. He's the first person to work out that, hey, wait a second, if I paint the ward on myself and the demons get through the outer circle, also the only circle, because how often I was thinking, okay, why don't you just have like 3 circles of wards, but often there are only 1 circle of wards, so as soon as one ward fails, the demons get in straight away, and it seems to be like a new technology. Hey, let's have 2 circles of wards, or 3 circles of wards. Anyway, but the point is like, so if all the circles of wards fail, if I have the wards on my clothes, or maybe I wear a crown or a hat with some wards on it, or maybe I wear a suit of armor with some wards on it. It's like nobody's ever thought of this before. Not a hat with wards, not bracelets with wards. Nobody has ever thought of putting wards on their body, it seems. And then he goes straight to tattooing himself. And I was like, well, why don't you just have some like wards on a glove or a bracelet or some jewelry? But nope, none of that happens. So I was thinking, okay, 300 years, he's the first one to think of this. And once he thinks of it, it just works the first time. He's just like, right, I found these new wards, these will be good, I'll just put them here on my arm and my hand and my head, and he just does it. And I was like, oh, I thought this was going to be like a really interesting transition into him going from normal man into warded man. It happens really late in the book, and then it happens in a really disappointing way. First, because we spend so much time with him as a child, and then he's an apprentice, and we spend time with him as apprentice, and then he's like, right, I'm going to go away and be a messenger, and suddenly he just drops out of the narrative, and it's like, 3 years later, he's an amazing messenger, and he's really good at riding, and he's really good at fighting, and he's really good at drawing, and he's really good at everything. I was like, whoa, 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 okay, so aren't we going to get any of those adventures? Like, we get him sitting around in a city, learning a lot, we get him sitting around at home, learning a lot, like, moping over being am I going to have a wife when I grow up, I'm going to be a messenger, like, lots of moping around, but then when the interesting adventures happen, it's like, okay, all of those adventures are happening, and we're not going to read about them, and he's going to go off to the racist Arab land over there, where everything is like, oh, it's like, okay, this is a fantasy world. Why can't he just like invent a new culture? Maybe be influenced by cultures, but why does he have to be influenced by the most racist depictions of these other cultures? Anyway, so that's where he goes, and it's like, hey, you're back here, and your demon, your pet demon who's following you, he's back again, and these other people are going, oh, you must have had some interesting adventures recently. And he's going, yes, I have had some interesting adventures. And I'm like, hey, Peter F. Brett, could you not skip over the interesting adventures? So we skip over his interesting adventures, and then he gets into an admittedly pretty fun adventure, and he learns how to tattoo himself. And then he just disappears again, and then we skip forward another 2 years, and he's like, hey, and I'm back, and I've had all these other interesting adventures. And I'm like, whoa, 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 let's go back. Why can't we read about those interesting adventures? And he's got himself a horse with wards on it, and he's suddenly... And all of the time before, we get like this coming-of-age kind of story, which is okay, nothing bad about it. But then when the warded man, Arlen, actually becomes the warded man, we don't see it. I mean, we see him tattooing himself, but actually what he becomes, and I mentioned this before, he just becomes a different person, and he becomes like this amazing Superman, amazing guy who is just really good at everything he does, and he's good at unarmed combat, and he's really good at like armed combat, he's very good with a spear, he takes on whole groups and gangs of other people, he's just amazing at fighting demons anyway, like that. And that's before he becomes a warded man. And then he becomes a warded man, and he becomes even more amazing of a Superman. He's just like, he's just a guy, and he's just amazing. And like, he's just amazing at everything he does. People want to have sex with him, but he's still a virgin because being a virgin. Yeah, and I'm just all this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, he's now developed into a human being, which is totally different from where he was 2/3, 3/4 of the way through the book. And then we skip forward over to what he becomes now, and we get like this boring Superman guy at the end of the book. And I'm like, well, why do we need anyone else? Like, he is totally Superman. He is totally the Messiah. What else? Who else do we need in the story? Actually, just him. Don't really need anyone. Oh, actually, we do. We need someone for him to explain stuff to him. So let's have Roger and the Jungler along. Oh, and he needs someone to have sex with him as well. So let's bring Alicia into the story at this moment too. So, yes, that whole idea of what's going on there, like the developments of the characters, we seem to skip over what I would expect to be the most important part of the development into someone becoming the Warded Man and spend a lot of time as a child, it's not all bad. Anyway, so let me talk about the audiobook here. So Pete Bradbury does the narration. And it's fine. The writing isn't great. It's kind of very basic. It feels very much like, oh, this is this person's first novel, isn't it? And then you go, oh, yeah, it was his first novel. It feels very much like that, just because of the pacing issues and the general writing, you know, some bits and pieces of the writing. However, Pete Bradbury does a good job with the narration. Because everything is very much the same, you know, the characters are kind of often going through the similar things in their life, and the places where they are generally quite similar. What will happen is he will pause between the chapters or pause between the sections and go from one character to the other. Now, this is really great because often when I'm listening to an audiobook, the chapter markers aren't very well delineated. There isn't sort of like chapter 3. This time, I'm like, okay, I'm setting up with a new character. Or if there's not a chapter, it's just sort of like in a book, you realize, oh, there's just a gap, you know, between these two paragraphs in the book, there is an extra space. And I now know that I'm changing scenes. I'm going forward into the future or changing to a different character. And sometimes audiobooks are really bad because they'll be talking about character A, character A, character A, and he did this and he did this and he did this and he did this. And then they'll say, character B, he did this, he did this. And if you just miss that little character B, that you go, oh, okay, now we're in a different place. Whereas what Pete Bradbury does, or the producer of this, is like between every chapter, there is a really long pause. And the really long pause isn't too bad. I mean, it's really clear that now we're going into a different section. However, I often listen to audiobooks when I'm, getting ready to sleep, and I put it on so as a sleep timer. So at one point, there'll be that it'll just pause itself. It'll just fade out and pause. And often that'll happen like at the end of a sentence, and it'll pause, and I'll be like, okay. Normally, with audiobooks, I know that straight away, if there's nothing for that 1 second, it's probably paused, and I can just, you know, press play again, reset the sleep timer and you know, for another 30 minutes or another 15 minutes or however long however tired I think I am and how much more I'm going to go. Was the problem with this book is that because there was a lot of these pauses between chapters, which was suddenly just pause, and I'd be like, is something wrong? Did the Audible app crash, or is it the end of a chapter, or is it the sleep timer? So every time there was a chapter between, I'd be like, okay, wait. And it would get this kind of weird angst, this kind of weird thing in me. But it wasn't bad. It was just sometimes it's a bit disconcerting when suddenly the audio drops out for so long. Anyway, that's really all I've got to say about the audiobook. But as you can see there, that's probably as disconcerting and disquieting as actually having what was going on within the audiobook. But you can get this audiobook free. This is what I did. I didn't get it free. But because I have an Audible account, you get this book. And I got this book via Audible. You can also get Audible. This is the Audible sponsorship slot of the podcast. If you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, sign up, get this book. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good book. I say that after slating it all the way through. It's pretty good. You can get it for free. Sign it for free trial. I have two books. I'm one on the 2 books per month trial, the Platinum account. You can get a Gold account as well. And it's a really good deal, 2 credits per month. And if you sign up with audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you help support this podcast and get a free book when you first sign up. And that free book is yours forever. If you actually sign up for trial and you check out some books and you don't like them, there's actually kind of like a no questions asked return policy. Just say, this book wasn't for me. I only got a little bit way into it. Can I have a different book, please? And they'll say yes, because you're a member of Audible and we like to treat you well. So check that out. Anyway, let's get on to what else have we got to go here. Different themes of the book. The themes of the... Oh, I've made a note here. Juggling. So one of the main characters becomes a juggler. If this is the first episode of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast that you've ever listened to, you might not know that I am actually a professional juggler. And jugglers are kind of like a trope, like tropey character in fantasy books. Sometimes they're the main character, like in Lord Valentine's Castle, and or sometimes they're just side characters. Sometimes a juggler will come along and do something. Here we have like one of the three main characters is learning to juggle, except he's missing a few fingers, so it's difficult for him. One thing I always love, and is kind of like a bit frustrating and a bit weird reading about this kind of thing in fantasy novels, it's like that, like it's like the authors of the book have never seen juggling before, or they're writing the book and go, I wonder what kind of juggling used to happen in medieval times or something, and they'll just go and have a look like at a picture of like a medieval picture of a juggler, and they're like, there's probably six balls there, okay, that's six objects. But then they go, right, okay, six objects, now let's go across and just turn those balls, six ball juggling, let's just turn them into just random objects and just add another two objects. So there's so many books I'm reading, it's like, and then after 3 months of juggling he was really struggling with his seven ball juggling pattern. I'm like, whoa, go back a bit. Seven balls are really, really hard. I'm a professional juggler and I perform with seven balls on stage, and I do like 14 catches of seven balls on stage. That's kind of my level. That's kind of general professional juggler level. Seven balls is good, you know. I have in the past juggled nine balls on stage, but only for a night. And then in the fantasy books, and it's like, and then he kept his seven ball juggling pattern, and after 2 minutes his arms were getting tired. And I was like, okay, you realize that's, you know, if you're getting seven balls for 2 minutes, like you're one of the best jugglers in the world who ever, like. So in this book, there's sort of like, and this guy who is missing fingers in one hand, is his master threw him a ball and then a coin and then another ball and then two more coins. And he's like, and he got into five balls. Okay. But when the sixth came in, he was really disappointed because he didn't get the sixth ball. And I'm like, whoa. As a professional juggler, you've just described something which I can't do. You've just described something which takes a lifetime of learning to be able to do. And then there's another point in the book where, like, and you picked up a ball and a pan and an arrow and a knife and a meat cleaver and something else and juggled them effortlessly. And then someone else stole that object. And it's just like, okay, this is absolutely crazy. Like, how can anyone, like, just watch any video of any juggler who isn't someone called Anthony Gatto, and you'll realize that what you're describing is just impossible. Well, not just impossible, but just so far beyond anything. And it's not like, and he started his juggling show, and he just started off with four ball jugglers, keeping it simple. And I'm thinking, as a professional juggler, I do a 50-minute show, and I start off with three balls, you know, I start off with nothing, you know, and it takes a long time to build up, like, so, it always makes me wonder, okay, when they're talking about other things like riding horses or carpentry and all these other things that I'm not a professional at, do people who ride horses and do carpentry and learn all this other stuff, do they look at this and go, you know, that person's learning it suspiciously quickly and is now able to do stuff which is physically impossible? And I'm always wondering that when I read, you know, it's like whenever you read a news story about you or about something you know, that you always realize, oh, there's like four or five major errors in this one story. Because I know about it, I realize that there's errors in it. And then you think, oh, do all news stories about everything have four or five major errors in them, and you just don't know about those errors because you're not like a domain expert? It turns out, yes, newspapers are totally untrustworthy, and everything is like, most things that you read have major errors in them. Most things that you read in the news, like a lot of the stuff just doesn't, it just isn't right like that. And I often feel like, well, I like to feel that fantasy authors and other authors put the work in to make things a little bit more believable than that. What do I have here? Themes. I put this themes that, like, I often make a note, you know, as I go through my notes of, or if I make some notes about a podcast that I'm going to record about the book, I go, okay, the setting, the characters, the magic system. Oh, I didn't actually talk about that. Yeah, magic. No, I did talk about that. The wards. It's weirdly about the magic system is that it feels very like high magic, that this everything is magic-y, and yet it feels kind of mundane, that there's sort of like, yes, if anyone can do it, like, because you just draw something and you have a ward and that's it. And at one point in the book, they're like, hey, why don't we share the wards around so more people can survive? And I was like, yeah, if it's that easy, if it's literally just writing it correctly, writing these wards correctly, why doesn't everyone learn this? And in some villages, everyone does, but other times, oh, the warding people, they learn the wards. And I'm like, if your life requires it, everyone should be learning warding, right? Isn't that just everybody just learns it as a child? So for something that's so mundane, it feels very special within the books. Anyway, so I make these different notes, and I come down to themes, and I wrote themes, and then it's just empty, and I'm like, okay, the themes are like magic can make you into a Superman, and that's awesome. Is that the theme? Like, sex is bad? Is that a theme? Really? Because it seems like the people who actually do have sex in the book seem to really enjoy it. A few of the characters are like, yay, we have sex, and it's really, really great. And I'm like, hey, you people who are saving yourself for no reason in a world where having babies is the most important thing, like, why is this? Women are inferior. That seems to be a theme of the book. Is that a written theme, or is that just the way it's badly written? Muslims are bad news. Is that a theme of the book, or is it just sort of like, you know, racist tendencies? But the next book, I'm like, oh, I see the title of the next book. It's called the Desert Spear, and it's set up at the end of this book what the Desert Spear is. And I'm like, well, that's going to be that second book I don't see being any less racist than this one. So thematically, this book is a bit weird, a bit unbalanced. Now, I have gone through this book and pretty much panned everything. However, I did actually quite enjoy listening to the first two thirds of this book. There are like two thirds of a really interesting book here, and it all just falls apart at the end. I almost wish that this book hadn't been called The Warded Man. Alan had just gone along on this journey, and as soon as he leaves his girlfriend behind and goes off to become a messenger, mild spoilers, I'm just thinking, okay, that could be the end of the book. If that was the end of the book and we stopped there and the other characters got to where they could continue on their stories and do that kind of stuff, I'd be like, well, that would be a very interesting book about three young people starting off as children, growing up in this world, making difficult choices, and that would be great. Two-thirds of the book, three-quarters of the book are that. It's like a collection of short stories of what it's like to live in this world. And then at the end, it just goes, oh, and I guess these three characters, they've got to meet up. There's got to be a battle at the end, and the Warded Man has to become the Warded Man. Okay, let's just shove that into the last quarter of the book, and it really goes downhill. The Last Stand of the Humans, really tedious. And I was just like, do I have to do, like, what are these people, like, why are these people fighting? And at the end, I was just like, if this is a thing, like, people know that you can put wards on yourself, like, why isn't everyone tattooing themselves? Why isn't everyone just learning this kind of stuff? And it doesn't really hold together at the end. The whole world and the whole book seems to fall apart at the end, which is a bit weird, because I looked up a few reviews on Goodreads, and people were saying, oh, it's really slow at the start, but then it really picks up towards the end. And I always realize that, oh, it really picks up. It always feels to me mindless action at the end that satisfies people who just want some more mindless action, like tedious battle scenes. It's always really picking up at the end. It's like, yeah, a battle happened. Is that really what I wanted at the end of this book? Yeah. Not a lot going on in this book. However, most of it was a good book. As I was going through, I was like, oh, solid, you know, 3.5, 4-star book. It ended so bad. So it's going to end up to be, you know, it's bad to say this again, two fantasy books in a row, which is like parts really good, other parts really not great at all. So it kind of averages out as a 2-star, 2.5-star book, which is disappointing because so much of this book was actually fun to read, interesting to read, the journeys that the young characters go on. It's like, well, stuff is happening. This is actually, if the only concerns in this world are young girl doesn't know who she wants to get married to, doesn't really know what she wants to do in life, and decides, you know, not to have sex with a boyfriend too early, I'm like, okay, I guess that's a good story. That's an interesting enough story. The characters are okay. But again, it just doesn't stay that way. It just doesn't hold together. So, I say, much of a pity of a book, but still, I guess worth reading. Will I read the next book? Nah, probably not. There's nothing in this book. There's nothing here which, like, if there is a big mystery of who the demons are, don't really care about it. What happens with Arlen and these characters in the future? Nah, don't care about them. So much of this book was spent with them as kids. I actually enjoyed them as children. And then as soon as they turn adults, I'm like, well, I don't really care about you anymore because you're all different people and there's this big chasm between who you were and who you are and who you are. Don't really care about anymore. And there's going to be a battle between the Muslims and the Arabs that come in with their desert spear. And it's going to be a battle between white Europeans and Arabs. And I'm just like, I'm not really sure I need that kind of, not really sure I need that. I've read that so many other times in other fantasy books. I don't think I need it told less well and with characters who I don't enjoy so much and a less satisfying kind of world and magic kind of ideas and things like that. I can get this in other ways, in other books. So that's it from me with Peter V. Brett. Don't see myself carrying on with this, unfortunately. So You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email that I get. Thanks for all the people who've said that they've started listening in 2008 and stuck with me all the way since 2008. All two of you. Thank you very much, all two of you who said that you've been listening that long. So you can become my friends on goodreads.com and follow along with what I'm reading. I'm currently at sea. I'm sailing down towards Antarctica. I will not have good internet connection for another week or so. So I'm actually recording this on Sunday, 17th of January. There might be a few episodes being uploaded at the same time within a few days of each other. So check out tomorrow where you are now, and you'll probably already find some more podcasts there ready to go. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.